This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
It's the type of day that the Gas House Gang was made for, with Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji in studio with me. I'm Tom Ackerman, Matt Bajeski, Frank Ladd, our producers, and Sonny Gray traded to the Boston Red Sox for a pair of pitchers, Brandon Clarke and Richard Fitz. We're going to break that down with a member of WEEI in Boston. By the way, at noon is typically when this goes down, and it has been made official. The Cardinals have officially announced this trade. So they have just posted just seconds ago that they have acquired Richard Fitz, Brandon Clarke, and a player to be named later, or cash considerations, from the Boston Red Sox in exchange for Sonny Gray and cash considerations. Let's get a first reaction out of Bernie Miklas based on your gathering of information over the last hour.
Well, this left-hander, Brandon Clarke, he's the, according to MLB Pipeline, he's the number five Red Sox prospect. He throws 100 miles an hour. I mean, his fastball hits 100 miles an hour, and he has got, the scouts say, he has got a tremendous slider. So he's got some really, really nasty stuff. Now, in the past, hard thrower, he's had some physical issues, but that's behind him now. And the fact that he's, you know, he pitched in high A last year. I know some Cardinals fans will be disappointed in that. I'm not, because the whole point of flipping Sonny Gray is to build for your future. And so they picked up an elite pitching prospect that fits into their future plans. And as for Richard Fitz, 26 years old, he's only made 10 major league starts. I think that 14 major league starts maybe. And he doesn't have dynamic strikeout stuff, but be a solid pitcher, and I think probably would have a really good chance to be in the Cardinals' rotation next season. Apparently, he knows how to pitch. He's got a really good arsenal. He throws like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He throws 7 different types of pitches, and I'm sure the Cardinals might get him to streamline that, maybe reshape his arsenal, things like that, but he's a guy I know the Red Sox like, so we'll see how he fits into the Cardinals' plans in 2026.
Yeah, how he fits indeed. I think fits exactly what the Cardinals were looking for here, was somebody who they could plug in right away. And then in the case of Clarke, this is a guy who went from the 29th best prospect to 5 very quickly because he has that fastball, because he's young. And, you know, I agree with you, Bernie. I know that fans are going to say no. Fans are going to be excited. I won't listen to anybody who says that they think this is a slam dunk of a trade or this is a terrible trade. I mean, it's like it's something in the works, right? And that is, we're going to know about as we move along here. Now, the reporting that $20 million has moved over to Boston, don't love it, but it's part of the territory. It's part of doing business. I mean, Gray makes a lot of money. And if you want to make these deals happen, Chris Ranji, you got to give us some cash. Right.
And the same thing might be true of Nolan Arenado. If they want to move that contract, they're probably going to have to do the exact same thing, give up some money to do it. But if you're freeing up space so that you could play your younger players or give other guys a chance or give them more of a chance than they've had, then that's just the price of doing business. I don't think that you're going to have any other option.
And Tom, I want to add something about Richard Fitz, who, again, I think has got a really good chance to be in the Cardinals rotation in 2026. I said he didn't have strikeout stuff, which I want to correct. He didn't strike out a lot of people, but do it. Looking at a StatCast profile, he's got, in terms of his fastball velocity, he's in the top 28% of major league pitchers. He has he gets them to chase stuff out of the zone because he throws so many pitches. He's like in the top 25% of getting him to swing at non-strikes. He also is a tall guy, so he's got great extension. It's hard to pick up the ball out of his hand. And, you know, here's a guy that can throw 96, and he's got all these other pitches to offset the heat. So I actually think he's got more talent than what his brief stats, like a, you know, his ERA in the major leagues, you know, relative to like 60 innings, which is nothing. I think he's got more upside than if people want to be dumb and just look at his ERA based on a small sample size, okay. be dumb. It's okay. I think he's got a lot of upside, though.
Well, so that, I mean, that's the thing too, is that we have to assume, or at least leave the possibility open that they've got a new regime, right? I mean, some of the same people are still around in the front office, but you've got a new guy in charge. So you have to assume now that there are maybe things being identified with other players that they want to acquire that weren't being identified before. Now, we don't know that to be true. We don't know if this is anything there or if it's just Heim Bloom has a relationship with Boston. So maybe he knows a little bit more about this guy than John Mozeliak would have. Maybe there's something proprietary. I don't know. But we have to assume that maybe they're looking at incoming prospects a little differently than the last president of baseball operations did.
And I'll say this too, Tom. Sorry, man. I trust Heim Bloom until there's a reason for me not to trust him.
Yep, that's how I feel.
Right?
Yep.
And Heim Bloom had a certain thing in mind when he put Sonny Gray out there, and Heim Bloom talked to a bunch of teams. So does anyone of sound mind think that he took decided to take the fifth best offer or something? No, I think he took this offer because he loved it. And again, we'll see what happens. But high upside guy, one of the Red Sox top prospects, blazing stuff. And then you got a guy that can be a solid starter in 2026 for the Cardinals.
I agree. And that's exactly what you want. At this point, Bernie, your goal is to acquire as much starting pitching and relief pitching, but starting pitching as possible. You cannot go into this season with five starters. You need like 8 or 9 or 10. I mean, you need some depth right now, and he is not done. In fact, he told me on Sunday, you heard it, Bernie, he said most of these deals, you're going to see a rush of some deals here before Thanksgiving, and then there will be a bit of a cooling off period, and then they resume as they get closer to the winter meetings, and he was including himself in that without telling us. I mean, I think there's probably something else coming this week as well if they're on the move with Sonny Gray.
You got a scoop for us?
No, yeah. I'm just like reading it here. That means they're shopping Arenado. Now, Arenado does not have the same kind of juice that Gray has in a trade. Gray is your number two starter, number three starter, depending on how good your rotation is. He jumps right in and he can land you some good return. Arenado is still an elite defensive third baseman, but we've all seen the offensive skill deteriorate, plus he's got a big old price tag. So let's just look at that one, Bernie, for a moment. Nolan Arenado, if you are trading him, what's realistic for the Cardinals here moving forward? And I would say 95% with certainty that he is going to be dealt.
And when you answer, we should keep in mind that of the $27 million owed to him next year, five of that is being paid by Colorado still.
True.
So that's $22 million the Cardinals are on the hook for.
I see so many different salary figures on that. I don't even know what to believe anymore, seriously. So I'm just going to wait till the trade's made, then we're going to find out. But you know, Mike Petrillo of MLB.com really wrote the best piece I have seen in terms of Nolan Arenado's destination and the possible fits. And anyone who knows Mike Petrillo's work, he's comprehensive and he's brilliant. And he made the point that he definitely believes Arenado is going to be traded. But when you went down his list, it's you know, I think people overstate, at least right now, the number of teams that are interested in him. A lot of different things is going to have to happen to get more teams involved on the Arenado stuff. So I was going down the line and I was like, wow, you know, there's just not that many places where you go, oh yeah, of course, that's an obvious fit, even though he's diminished offensively. The best fit by far, according to Mike Petrillo, are the Los Angeles Angels. And it's true. They don't have a third baseman. There's a lot of things they're missing, yet they still think they can win. So they would like to get a popular, born and raised locally type guy like Arenado in their uniform. I think if I had to guess, I mean, and again, I'm attributing all this to Mike Petrillo, who I have great respect for. I would put the Angels as the front runner because they are the most clear, direct, straight line fit for Arenado, and I know they wanted him last winter.
There's a lot of comment here about that money, and here's one. The fact that ownership was willing to kick in $20 million gives me hope that we aren't just dumping salary and serious about obtaining talent. That is from one of our listeners, viewers on YouTube. There was another one in here as well. This is Nick, who said, I don't know why fans are so heated about this team at this point. I mean, the toothpaste is out of the tube already. It's not going to change quickly. It's going to take a minute to reshape this team. Let's keep in mind that this is a multi-year project here moving forward, and Heim Bloom is in charge of it. Bernie, I don't know the timeline of these moves, but I do, Chris and Bernie, both. Chris, I'll go to you on this. I do think you're going to see a big changeover of this roster. It's just, you know, I don't know who exactly is going, but they're going, and it's going to happen.
Well, I think you're the one deal made today. I think they will figure out what to do with Arenado. I really would be surprised if he ends up on the roster for next year, even if that means they're eating a lot of money or they're not getting in return what you would in a typical deal, right? So I don't think that they're, and this is just my impression, and I could be totally wrong about this, but my feeling is that they just want to make that move. They want to do right by him. They want to do right by themselves and the roster and some of the younger players that they have that they would like to give opportunities to. So in that regard, just those two guys alone being removed from the roster and Miles Michaelis not being a starter in the rotation, already your team looks pretty different. We're only talking about three guys off the roster, but that is a pretty big change to not have them anymore.
Strike three called, and there's strikeout number 200 in 2025 for Sonny Gray.
Sonny Gray is on the move. The Boston Red Sox have acquired the Cardinals starter. Cardinals making that official within the last 15 minutes. A report that first came out from John Heyman, Jeff Passan, Derek Gould, they were all over it. So the deal, Brandon Clark and Richard Fitz, plus a player to be named or cash, coming the Cardinals' way. There are some cash considerations going each way, including a reported $20 million, up to $20 million, going Boston's way to cover some of Gray's salary. We're going to give away a couple of winter warm-up tickets coming up in just a bit. Not right now, but just want to let you know that. And Fitz could very well be signing an autograph for you, maybe even Clark. I don't know if they'll bring up the single-A prospect to a big event like that. Might be a little early for him. But Bernie, we're going to talk to Rob Bradford of WEEI at the bottom of the hour and really dive into these prospects and also the deal from Boston's perspective. But the more you and I and Chris continue to look into these pitchers, the better they look. I mean, maybe it's just we're looking at it through a Cardinals lens, but I'm intrigued. I mean, Clark is 6'4". He throws 100. He's added a few ticks to that miles per hour on his fastball, and then Fitz throws a number of pitches for strikes, and I guess that's why he's been featured as a starter.
See, here's what I do, you know, for those who are inclined listening to call me Fred Bird or something, right? Well, of course he's going to say that. But here's what I do. I go to two or three people, I would call them prospect watchers, that I really, really trust. And that's how I formed my initial opinion. And a guy that I really, really trust is Eric Langenhagen of Fangraphs. He's really, really good. He was one of the people that part of that committee over there that put the Cardinals farm system number one in the majors later in the majors, late in the major league season. Sorry. So it's interesting. If you go to, like, back at the end of June, they had an updated top prospect list with the Red Sox. And again, I respect this guy, neutral observer. He actually had Fitz rated fifth on the Red Sox best prospects list, two spots ahead of Clark. And I was reading his profile of Fitz, and Fitz brings a lot to the competition. I mean, he's got a really good four-seamer. He can get swing and miss and ground balls on his two-seamer. He throws a cutter. He throws a bunch of different pitches. He keeps hitters off balance. And, you know, the Yankees converted him to a starter in the minors when they had him. He had been a relief pitcher. And he took to it immediately. Like, in his first season in the minors as a starter, he threw like 150, 155 innings. It doesn't sound like much, but for a guy stretching out the first time, that's a lot. And according to Langenhagen, he basically portrays him as a guy that'll be a workhorse starter, but a talented one in a major league rotation. And let me tell you what Eric Longenhagen said about Clark, the hard-throwing guy that is the star of this trade, is from the bust, from the St. Louis standpoint in terms of what's coming back. He said Clark, if Clark can develop a better off-speed pitch, he'll be an all-star. He's got everything. He just needs to offset that heat that he has and that great slider that he has. And I think the Cardinals, with Matt Pierpont and some of the changes they made in their pitching department, I think they'll be able to get him to throw an off-speed pitch that's effective, because that's what Matt Pierpont did with all those guys out in Seattle. So, I mean, that's a pretty strong endorsement. Someone I respect says he'll be an all-star. Yeah, okay, I'll take that. Call me Fred Bird, but I think that's a pretty good endorsement.
Well, that's the thing that I want to see this Cardinals organization become again, and that is being able to, and not just this, but also this, being able to identify talent from another team and be able to say, okay, we've watched him. We know there's something to unlock, and we know how to do it. And all of the changes they have made and been conscious of making, what Chaim Bloom's vision is, I hope that that comes to fruition, that, you know, a year or two from now, we're talking about how good the Cardinals are at picking up one of your guys and figuring out how to find one little element that he didn't have before and being able to unlock that element to the point where when the Cardinals are talking about wanting one of your players, you as an organization have to go, oh, what do the Cardinals see in this guy that we don't see? You know, like that's the kind of place I want this organization to get to. And we'll see if they can do that with somebody like Fitz or even Clark. You know, and what Fitz in Baseball America was just reading about him, that they sort of project back end starter for him, if everything goes well, and that's great. You know, Cardinals can use back end starters, and hopefully soon, right?
Yeah, there's. I can think of a guy or two that I would say, I hope that he is a back end starter as opposed to one of these other guys.
Yeah,
Andre Pallante. Anyway,
oh wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean,
I got an Andre Pallante autograph. Let's, come on. Yeah. Let's not devalue it.
I will say this: the Cardinals got very fortunate this past year that they didn't have an injury in their rotation. That's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
I mean, I've only had that one time that I've covered the team that I can recall. They're going through the whole season and not having an injury in the rotation. So that's amazing. That does not happen. So they need to have depth because they will have injuries. And by the way, these two guys have also dealt with injuries. That is going to happen to all pitchers. Here's the other thing, is brought up by Chris and Bernie, is that, you know, they've already done it with Bryson Watts. I mean, he had a VRA of above 5. They got their hands on him in 1 year. You know, they don't look at ERA. They look at what you have to work with and what is coming out of your hand and who you are and how they can shape you. All they did was make him into a guy with a sub-3 ERA, an 8-3 record, minor league pitcher of the year. So, you know, they do have already an early return on Motts. They're not all going to hit, but they identify people that they think they can change into stars. And maybe Fitz is that next guy. And, of course, Clark is somebody who's rapidly ascending. I mean, just I read it in the 11 o'clock hour with Chris and Amy right off of MLB Pipeline. They had a story. He could be the next breakout prospect for the Red Sox, Brandon Clark. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll really get into these two. You've landed on the right place if you've heard about the Sonny Gray trade, because Brandon Clark and Richard Fitz are two Boston pitching prospects that here comes Rob Bradford of WEEI. That's all he does is analyze the Red Sox.
And we'll be giving away those winter warm-up tickets very soon. Got to be listening for your chance to win.
Ooh, that's a tease. It's good, and a good one, I must say.
You're welcome.
Back after this. Cardinals winter warm-up. What do they call that in Boston? WEEI's Rob Bradford joins us now. Great member of our Odyssey family in Boston. They do a Red Sox convention, don't they, Rob?
Yeah, they do. They do. They try to. It's kind of not what it used to be. Yeah. It used to be like this unbelievable 4,000 person event, but they've been swimming upstream a little bit the last few years. So, but hey, listen, maybe the big Sonny Gray acquisition will make people go in droves. So
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, that's true. I want to ask you about that. You know, here's what I love about this deal is you've got maybe the two best baseball towns in America now discussing a deal. You know, everyone, these fans, the way they dive into it, Cardinals and Red Sox. So let me hear it from your perspective. Sonny Gray coming over to Boston, how do you view this deal?
I like it for both teams. It's two teams in two totally different places. From the Red Sox perspective, I'll look at it this way, is that it shows actually they think they can win the World Series, which, you know, the last few years I talk about swimming upstream, it's been sustainability talk. You know, we don't want to hear that in Boston. Nobody wants to hear that. And so I think when you get a guy on a one-year deal and giving up prospects, which we could all really see teams, we've seen it throughout baseball, where they hang on to prospects, even though they might be just okay prospects, they might be major leaguers. But my point is, if you're in position to make a move at the World Series, then get uncomfortable. Do these sort of deals. And from the Cardinals' point of view, I mean, I think that really what's going to be interesting is the Clark piece of this. Richard Fitz is a major league starter. Richard Fitz, to me, is a back-of-the-rotation major league starter. Great guy. Showed enough potential that he showed that he can actually pitch in the major leagues, like I said, at the back of a rotation. But Clark is the wild card because Clark is the guy with the upside. Clark is the guy who, when they came out of spring training last year, everybody was screaming and yelling, oh, my goodness, how did they get this guy in the fifth round? And he was neck and neck with the guy Conley early, who ultimately pitched in a postseason game. Now, it went off the rails a little bit with Clark because of this blister nail problem. But still, I think that this is the guy who's going to sort of make maybe this painful for the Red Sox a couple years down the road. But ultimately, as we sit here, I just like the deal for both teams.
Rob, Bernie Miklas, I just wanted to tell you, man, you and I have never talked. I've admired your work for years. You bust your tail, man, and covering the Red Sox. So it's nice to meet you, man.
Well, right back at you, Bernie. Right back at you. I appreciate
all right.
It.
It's a love fest. I like it. No, we got the brotherhood going, but I really mean that. Anyway, I was looking at Clark's stuff in the minor leagues last year, and he split the season between low A and high A. The dude averaged 14 strikeouts per nine innings. He didn't give up a home run, and he only allowed like four hits per nine innings. He seems to epitomize the word nasty. Is that how you see him?
Yeah. You know, I saw him pitch in, I don't even know what you call it, the Futures game. They have a couple different iterations of it in spring training, but they played the Rays, and he was the guy to me that jumped out off the page. Now, he had just been drafted the year before, so we didn't know a lot about him. But as I said, this guy, Conley Early, and in case people aren't familiar with Conley Early, he was basically like the Treya Savage for the Red Sox. He was that guy. Gets dropped in at the end of the year, pitches in a postseason game. And Brandon Clark was, like you said, neck and neck with Early at that time. He really, really was impressive. And then he gets out of the gate, same thing. We're talking about, oh, this guy, high 90s fastball. All of it, like the whole ball of wax. And then, as you saw, the numbers sort of went off the rails, especially with the control. You look at the command, the walks, that was a concern. I will say this. If I'm the Cardinals, and if I'm Cardinals fans, there's an explanation for this. There wasn't just, like, this guy just didn't fall off the cliff here for no reason. You had a very real blister and nail problem, which, as we know, the guy wants to pitch through it, but it's not always easy to pitch through. So if you want to find a reason why the numbers didn't add up to the stuff, I think that was a pretty good place to start. I think absolutely, if I'm making this trade with the Cardinals and I can't get a Conley Early and I can't get some of the top of the prospect guys like the Red Sox have, that Brandon Clark would absolutely be at the top of my list in terms of a guy who you think, hey, you know what? We might have something here.
And so this blister thing, I mean, it should be good to go by, you know, the next time a season rolls around, right? This isn't the kind of thing that's just been following him around his career.
No, I mean, I could make a really old Josh Beckett reference about, you know, the blister problems and all the remedies that you have. And no, I think that, you know how it is with when, especially it comes to prospects and young guys, they're going to be careful with them. They're not going to take any chances with them. I think that as the season ended, they were in a pretty good place with it. You never know. I mean, it could crop up again, but I'll say this. If you're saying to me, well, the red flag of this guy isn't a shoulder, isn't an elbow, but it's a blister and a nail, I'll take the blister and the nail every time.
Yep.
Rob, what is the perspective when it comes to Chaim Bloom? We've asked and talked from a Boston side about the former executive. Let's get your thoughts on Chaim Bloom, the new Cardinals president of baseball operations. Make no mistake, the era is underway with this deal, and the rebuild has begun.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's no room for interpretation, right? I mean, it's a rebuild. This is what you're building it back up. First of all, not that it matters, but I think Chaim's like one of the best people in baseball as a person. But in terms of the guy who ran the Boston Red Sox, he did a lot of great things. Yeah, I saw some of the GM meetings. You know, Roman Anthony, who is going to be a star in baseball, like he was one of the guys he was drafted. I mean, he did a lot of great things. The knock on Chaim was that he wasn't able to pull the trigger on deals. He was always sort of asked for more and more and more, which we see a lot, honestly, in baseball. We see a lot in front offices. But, you know, and he has the Mookie Betts thing lingering over him, whether you want to blame ownership or not. It is part of the resume. It's part of the Wikipedia page. But I do think that what I'm looking forward to see with Chaim is you take that year, how he views it, how he views he has his team, he has his people. He came into Boston, you know, not necessarily with his people. It was he was trying to figure things out as he went. So I'm really anxious to see if he's able, first and foremost, to keep pulling off trades like this one. Like, if you're able to keep pulling off trades and you're able to keep going down that road and get uncomfortable, that is the biggest thing. Get uncomfortable. If he's able to do that a little bit more than he was in Boston, then I think that he'll be a really, really good fit there.
Hey, Rob, that really great insight, and it kind of fits into what I was thinking about Bloom. I thought that was a tough spot for a first-time guy running a baseball operation. He inherited a lot of people. John Henry has been a great owner, but it seems from a distance he kind of changes his mind about stuff a little bit. But Bloom fulfilled his edict to give the Red Sox a great farm system. He really did, and he's got players all over the place. Even a couple of the prospects that he drafted were used to get Garrett Crochet. So, I mean, even stuff like that. But I thought – you're the guest, and I'm doing the talking. I apologize.
No, it's good. Thought, I like it.
I thought all the turmoil and the chaos that he went through there – would absolutely make him more prepared for this job. And to your point, my friend, he certainly pulled the trigger. He didn't mess around with Sonny Gray in this trade.
No, all of what you said is true. And I do think that it was the Boston thing's a weird thing because, you know, I think that at the end, really, there were some moments at the end where apathy was creeping in when it came to the Red Sox fandom. And that's the one thing that the ownership, it paralyzes the ownership. They panic over that. I remember the August leading in, you had the Dodgers fans storming all over Fenway Park down Lansdowne Street, taking things over. Bad look. Yankee series, dollar tickets, bad look. Like, that's the thing where – business-wise, I felt like the owners, who you're right with John Henry, I mean, Dave Dombrowski won the World Series, and 6 months into the season, he's fired. Like, now, you know, for same sort of deal with Chaim, you don't give him a whole lot of time. So I think that business-wise and perception is so huge in Boston, and that really was the problem with the Chaim era. So, yeah, I mean, I do think that he probably learned a lot. He's a really, really smart guy. He learned, think about it. When he came from Tampa, he was sharing that job with Eric Neander. So he knows what it's like to run a team. He knows that organization. He already has a head start with everything Cardinals. So I think he'll do a good job.
Yeah, every now and then there are teams or general managers, presidents of baseball operations who have relationships with certain other organizations maybe better than the rest of them. Could you see this be a situation where we often see Chaim Bloom deal with Boston?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a great question because I don't think he has a relationship really with Breslau. He does have a relationship with a lot of people who are there. Like you said, you know, Brian O'Halloran, Eddie Romero, Mike Groopman. Like, yeah, so and let's be honest, like in this day and age of baseball, those sort of guys, the assistants are talking a lot about these trades and making these trades happen as much as anybody. So there's that element. But when it comes to these players, they weren't really Himes players. I do think that he'll probably identify some more guys that, as you said, he drafted. Because let's be honest, when you draft a guy and you develop a guy, you see the absolute best in that guy. And you never forget the absolute best in that guy. And so I could see that happening because of it. But, you know, I think that Chaim has a lot of relationships throughout baseball. And, you know, that's one of the benefits of having the tenure that he did in Boston.
If you look, if you're watching on our X YouTube or Facebook stream and not listening on the radio, you can see on the back of Rob's microphone, it says Baseball Isn't Boring. That is the name of his podcast. Baseball Isn't Boring. He covers not only the Red Sox, but Major League Baseball. So before we promote that, let me ask you this. What do you see now that we're on a roll here and clearly in the rebuild? What do you see for Nolan Arenado?
You know, it's funny because I'll relate it back to the Red Sox. You know, the Red Sox, there were people in the Red Sox front office last year who wanted Nolan Arenado over Bregman. Now, Arenado was plan B for Bregman. There's no question about it. But there was a lot of people in the Red Sox like organization or front office, or at least a few, that said, hey, if he does this, if he does that, we see the underlying stats, and then he get off to the good start, and they're like, oh, look at what he's doing. And then, obviously, he trailed off. Now, will they go down that road again if they lose Bregman? I don't think so. Like, I don't think so. I think that, you know, he is what he is. I think last year, if you go back to last year's offseason, it was with Arenado, there was that. It wasn't just the Red Sox. There were other teams saying, we think there's more in there. We think that, like, if he just tweaks this or does that, or that was an aberration the year before, maybe not anymore. Maybe it is just what it is. But I think undeniably what the Sonny Gray trade shows is, well, okay, next up, you know, it's not complicated. And he's still a useful guy for a team, probably a team that, you know, thinks it's going to win with a complimentary part like him.
We look forward to future visits with you, and tell us about Baseball Isn't Boring. People can find it on the Odyssey podcast platform and other places, right?
Yeah, it's a national baseball podcast I do every single day, which I told Odyssey I would do it every single day 3 years ago, and that's what I did. Probably bit off a lot more than I could chew, but not really. I love doing it, like every single day. I love doing it. And we started with Joe Kelly, former Cardinal, wrote a book with Joe. We both got Baseballs and Boring tattoos after he won the World Series. And so it's just a great, people like talking baseball. People like talking about baseball not being boring. And I've had a lot of fun doing it. I appreciate you mentioning it.
That's
thanks.
Awesome. Joe's one of the great guys. One year he was my neighbor at spring training.
Oh,
great dude.
Yeah. Like I said, we wrote a book called A Damn Near Perfect Game, which Tom Hanks came out of the woodwork in the summer and said, oh, this is the best book of the summer. I'm like, why couldn't you have said that 2 years ago when it came out? So, but anyway, we had a lot of fun with it. You know, as you said, you know, Joe, and he's a unique character, one of a kind. And I'm really privileged to have him by my side with this whole thing.
That's awesome. Baseball isn't boring. So the baseball rich fan base of St. Louis, let's get a few people right away to that podcast and tell your friends. Rob Bradford, thank you very much for being with us.
All right. Great talk with you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Coming to you from WEEI in Boston, among others.
Now back to the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Congratulations, Matt from Crestwood. Matt from Crestwood won those tickets for winter warm-up coming up in January. And guess what, Tom and Bernie? We got one more pair of tickets to give away. We'll do that tomorrow.
It's funny to read all the comments on YouTube I would just go to YouTube. Just go to the KMOX. I'm not going to start posting them all up on the stream because we're out of time. But just go there and read them. It's interesting because you have both sides of fans and then everybody in the middle. This is a...
Yeah, Tom, I'm furious because I thought they would get Garrett Crochet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Roman Anthony. I'm devastated. Bloom's got to go.
Yeah, I know.
I've made up my mind anyway.
Somebody already said they missed Mozeliak. Here's a sensible
possible to be that dumb
breakdown anyway. Of the trade from Chad Jennings. So Chad Jennings, who covers the Red Sox for The Athletic, who we may try to get on the show tomorrow, he gives the Red Sox an A- on this trade, and he gives the Cardinals an A. He mentions that these two teams are in totally different places, that the Cardinals are where the Red Sox were when Haim was running them, and the Red Sox are ready to win, and that's why Gray fills the void, and he is a rental. The Cardinals, on the other hand, writes Jennings, are where the Red Sox were 5 years ago. They're resetting. Another year of Gray would have been a waste. They're paying down his enormous salary, but are getting two big arms in return, one of whom, Fitz, can immediately move into Gray's rotation spot. Fitz isn't an ace, but he's a solid option with the raw stuff to potentially fall back into a multi-inning relief role. Clark is farther away, but offers greater upside, and again, has a solid floor and as a hard-throwing reliever, perhaps. The two big arms, quality return for an overpaid rental. Bernie, how about that from Chad Jennings?
Yeah, and I trust him, too. He's another one of these guys, when I read his stuff, totally objective, good stuff. And I don't want to get myself worked up, but it would actually be funny if I wanted to get myself worked up to read a lot of dumb comments, people roasting Bloom for what appears to be on a national level a highly graded trade from the Cardinals standpoint. Forget what we say. I'm talking about independent people, independent of outside of St. Louis. They all think this is pretty damn good for the Cardinals. So, but hate on, baby. Rage on, hate on. You know, if it makes you feel better, as Lennon said, whatever gets you through the night, go for it.
I love the rage. Here's one last one, Bernie. We got about a minute, but this one's from Nick. The Cardinals opening day starter, is he on the roster now, or do they have to go find him?
I don't know. I don't rule out Haim Bloom looking for more pitching help, but I don't know if that'll be an opening day starter guy. I mean, so Nick, I love you, dude. I do, but I don't know how to answer the question. I apologize.
Yeah. Decent question.
It's
definitely worth exploring. Fill in the blanks here with this rotation. Our visits with Bernie, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin dealer. My friend, always a pleasure. Great to have you on the show. Thank you. Good to visit with him. Chris Ranji. Always. Rob Bradford bringing the heat from WEEI.
Awesome. He's good,
Boston.
Man.
That was good.
Awesome.
Matt Pajeski's going bananas in here. Frank Ladd.
Bananas.
I'm Tom Ackerman. Great to be with you. It is the Gas House Gang. We'll be back tomorrow with much more on this trade, and we'll get you ready for some football as well. Thank you for joining us.